mid-August. It's hot, it's humid, there's COVID. Just to summarize, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because people probably figured out how to look themselves now. Our relaxed nation variant wave, Delta wave, continues to increase. We'll talk about our area here in a little bit. Nationally, I can tell you the South, the real South, way South, is getting hammered. Louisiana, southern Mississippi, southern Alabama, southern Georgia, along the panhandle of Florida into middle Florida, Texas, Arkansas. The one state that's actually doing a little bit better is Missouri. And why is that important? It's because that's where all this started. They were, especially southern Missouri, a very under-vaccinated state. And Delta took advantage of people not taking precautions in that area first. And their hospitalizations went up. They're the ones, the first people who had problems with hospital staffing and having to do other care plans and such. But their cases are going down now, and their hospitals are relaxed some. So that's good. How long did it take it to go through Missouri? It was about 2.5 months. So we started here in the Triad in mid-July. Cases started going up a little bit, and really mostly in August, as I predicted, I might add on, back in June. And I still stand by my prediction that towards the end of September, things are going to be looking better for us. And as we get into October, particularly. So we're going to talk about a lot of questions today, but there's a few things I wanted to bring up. First of all, what's going on here in the Triad? It's kind of interesting. Here in Forsyth County, while our case numbers are going up, they're not going up as fast as they are in the counties around us. The ones that are having the most trouble right now are Rowan, to some extent Davidson, Davie now, Wilkes, Stokes, Surrey, and Yadkin. If you look at their cases per 100,000, they're about twice as high as what they are here. Maybe not quite, but about twice as high as what they are here in Forsyth County. And in Rowan, it's about three times as high. Those counties, the number of vaccinated people is not proportionally as high as it is here in Forsyth County. Talking to Joshua Swift yesterday, excuse me, our vaccinations are going up slowly here in Forsyth County in the last couple weeks. I think Delta variant got some people motivated. Also some vaccine mandates in workplaces, including our healthcare systems, have also gotten people motivated a little bit. Unfortunately, the vaccines that are going into people now, which will be good for the long run to keep things nice and quiet for us, aren't quite going to be in there fast enough to help us with this time of Delta right now, because if you remember, it takes a while. If you get a messenger RNA vaccine, it's roughly 6 weeks from the first shot before you get through the shots and have your immune system have time to get through it. I don't want that to discourage people. Go out and get it, because it's going to hasten the end of the wave and give us a lot better fall and a lot better winter. So still need to go out and get vaccinated. Some other little differences in epidemiology around the area is that I think there's a lot of people who are not getting tested. That's not a good thing. And there could be a lot of reasons for that, that people don't want to know that they have COVID if they get sick. But you need to get tested so we can do the contact tracing, because quarantine and isolation are two of our best tools yet. And we have to get people tested who are sick. And that includes if you've been vaccinated, because if we've been hearing about breakthrough infections, they do occur in vaccinated people, and you still need to be tested. That way we know what you know what to do in your household and with your workplace and while you have your cold symptoms from COVID, you still need to make sure you don't give it to others. It still largely is two different things. We have a pandemic, which is an epidemic in our unvaccinated people, and it's all Delta variant now. And then we have sort of a more of an endemic upper respiratory tract infection occurring in vaccinated people, at least those who are not immunocompromised. I took a little bit of heat for calling it a COVID cold, but you know, really that's what it is. It still is a COVID cold, because a cold is an upper respiratory tract infection that affects the back of your nose, your nasal pharynx, and might give you a little bit of cough. Cold doesn't give you pneumonia. Cold doesn't give you systemic problems with other organs in your body. A cold doesn't land you in the hospital. So I'm gonna stand by calling it a COVID cold. Yes, some colds are bad colds, and some colds are not so bad. And that's kind of what's going on. I think the one symptom that comes with the COVID cold and breakthrough infections that bother the people the most is the loss of sense and smell. We're starting to get some information about that, that in people who are getting breakthroughs, that doesn't last nearly as long as it does in people who are unvaccinated. Also, I've heard that some people feel fatigue afterwards. And yes, that happens. But we're starting to get some information now that long COVID, which is long-term symptoms after COVID, is pretty unusual in people who have breakthrough infections. So that's good news. So I'm going to stand by. I'm going to still call it a COVID cold. What's the important thing about a COVID cold is not to give it to somebody who has special needs. In other words, who's immunocompromised or unvaccinated, or at the extremes of age, or has a lot of underlying medical problems. That's the transmission from a vaccinated person that we worry about, is vaccinated to unvaccinated. Vaccinated to vaccinated transmission from breakthrough infections occurs a lot less frequency than it does between unvaccinated. Where we're mostly seeing it is in households and or people who spend a lot of time together. So for instance, you decide to drive down to Atlanta together, 5.5 hours together in a car, one person has a COVID cold, the other person's also vaccinated. And that's a transmission that could happen. It's like colds. Colds can get transmitted between people who are immune to that type of cold. So that's a little bit of the way to think about it. There's a question I get is how dire of a situation are we in with our hospitals? I'll be quite frank, the number of COVID patients in our hospitals here in the Triad area is pretty high. It feels a little tight and uncomfortable, but it's not dire. One of the issues that we're having is that we have staff who also are getting COVID, most of them unvaccinated, by the way, and which is why one of the reasons why we have a vaccine mandate that we're putting in place in our healthcare systems, because we need our staff to not get COVID. This is one reason. So when our staffing gets a little tight, then it becomes a little harder. We are not having alternate care plans in place at this time. We are not in a place where we're having to cancel elective procedures. You do not need to worry that our hospitals can't take care of other emergencies. So if you're having chest pain at home, we still need you to dial 911 and come to the hospital. If there's something that you've been putting off seeing a doctor, you need to go to the doctor and get that done. So please don't put off medical emergencies or medical necessities. Things aren't that dire. because we know how to deal with these in our healthcare systems. We did it in January. We can do it again. I was asked, you know, does this mean if I have a stroke that the care I get in the hospital won't be as good? No. If you have a stroke, the care you get in the hospital will be just as good as in a non-COVID time. There's no worries about that. If we have to change staffing around a little bit, we'll do it and put off elective procedures for a month or so. But we are not going to let medical emergencies or medical necessities go uncared for. Question that comes up, are we getting close to herd immunity? I've been asking that a few times. Well, it depends how you define herd immunity. We're getting there. I think this wave is the wave that's going to get us close to it, because either you're going to get vaccinated or you're going to get COVID. So you'll become immune. You can choose how. I'd probably choose the vaccine. It's a lot less risky than choosing getting COVID. But as our immunity levels get high enough, that's what's going to terminate this wave. I mean, even Delta responds to an immune system. So the other thing Delta responds to is a mask. I get this feeling that people think that masks don't work anymore because it's Delta. I can tell you that Delta does not carry a mutation that makes the scissors to cut through masks. So the mask works against Delta. And this is our tool right now to help us get through this wave. The mask is the tool that we need to use to help us do things that we still want to do, because we don't want to have to go on lockdown. We don't want to close the schools. We don't want to close, you know, all of the fitness centers, the restaurants, all those things we enjoy. So let's use the mask. And that'll help get us through it. Particularly if you're unvaccinated, my gosh, wear a mask, because that is your only thing that's keeping you from getting infected. That hand washing a little bit and staying away from other people, but the mask is the main tool. One thing I wanted to mention before we get to questions is about booster shots. That is the number one question I get. It seems like everyone wants one. And some people are going out to find ways to get them outside of the usual systems. I don't really encourage that for healthy people. It doesn't really seem like we need a booster right now. If we do need a booster, let's do it in a way that's based on data and science. And I'm not so sure that a person who's gotten fully vaccinated and gets a booster is any less likely to get a breakthrough infection, actually. And it has to do with immunity and how breakthrough infections occur in the nose and the back of the nose. And that the immunity that we have doesn't do as well against that surface in the nose. That's why we get colds that we're immune to. The booster may not actually help with that. Who needs a booster right now are our immunocompromised people. And technically, actually, it's not a booster. It's part of their primary series. So for people who are healthy, normally for a messenger RNA vaccine, we give two shots. For a immunocompromised person, they need three shots. And so we're very close now that approval is going to come through. And I think the FDA will announce it today. The ACIP is going to meet tomorrow and say who's on that list, because not everyone is the same level of immunocompromised. And then we can start giving that third shot of the primary series to our immunocompromised people. And I encourage them to get it. And this will mostly be people who have blood malignancies, that's a cancer, blood cancers, multiple myeloma, People who have who are on immunosuppression for inflammatory conditions like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, and people who have solid organ transplants. There'll be a few others in the list too. But people who have solid cancers like lung cancer, colon cancer and such, who are on treatment, probably don't need it. They seem to respond to the vaccine just as well in two shots. This week, the CDC officially changed its recommendation. Pregnant women now are recommended to get vaccinated. And so they join the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine, saying that pregnant women should get vaccinated. They went down and they looked, and there's no increased incidence of miscarriage or other problems with pregnancy in people who've received vaccines, COVID vaccines, during pregnancy. We do know that people who are pregnant do have a bit higher risk of having a hospitalization or a bad outcome from COVID. So if you're pregnant, you want to get your COVID vaccine. We still think that we know that our vaccines are still pretty good for Delta. That it's like not, every study shows it's about 99% of people who are hospitalized and are either immunocompromised or unvaccinated. So a vaccinated person who's not severely immunocompromised, the risk is about 0.008%. that if you get COVID, you'll get admitted to the hospital. And it's even lower to have a bad outcome from that hospitalization. So it seems pretty clear that the vaccines are working like we'd like them to. Let's go ahead and start thinking about questions. One of them I already answered was a question that came through about how our hospitals are doing. We're busy, hanging in there. And people don't need to worry about medical care that they might need to get in the hospital. You'll get just the same high quality care as you would otherwise. So Maggie asked the question, what should preschools look like as far as kids being masked? I tell you how a preschool should look, masked. and right now, teachers should be masked and the kids should be masked. If it was up to me, I would mandate that. Which could happen, actually. And so keep an eye on that. And I get asked a lot, you know, my child's going to preschool, and Jessica asked this, and I tell her to wear a mask, but she's the only one. And I said, well, this is a difficult conversation to have with the child, and here's how, because your child should stay masked, because the mask is going to help protect your child, and there's a lot of daycare center outbreaks out there right now. In areas where kids are not wearing masks, which means everyone gets to stay home for 10 days. Parents taking care of the kids. And we would rather have our kids having a happy education time in preschool and us doing the things we want to do and not having to stay home on quarantine with them. So you should have your child masked. The way that you need to talk to them and tell them why it's a good idea. Model it for them, so when you go outside to public places, you wear a mask also. So it's an example. Our family wears masks. It's not like you wear a mask. It's our family wears masks when we go out. And so you model it. And you explain to them why it's important and why to keep them healthy. You know, a lot of preschools have been working hard about teaching about other ways to stay healthy with hand washing and things like this, and just impart on them that this is just part of that. But yes, preschools, they should all be masked right now. I feel very strongly about that. There's something going on now in a change in our epidemiology, whereas last winter and spring, our kids were largely not getting COVID because they were sequestered. They were either they were home or they were going out and everyone was masked like they're supposed to be at that time. And our kids weren't getting it. Our kids are now getting COVID. It's still unusual for them to get hospitalized or have severe COVID. But it is happening more than it was last winter and spring. As of yesterday, there were 200 people in the United States under the age of 18 hospitalized with COVID. But so we don't want that for our children. So we need to go back to masking for our kids. For those school systems where masks are optional, Carla brings this up. In a county where spread is high and vaccination rates are low, should I be concerned for the elementary kids in my school and for myself? Concerned, yes. Worried, no. Two different things. I really think that those school boards who have said that masks are optional, I feel very strongly right now that they need to reconsider that decision. Otherwise, you're not going to get through, speaking to the school board, you're not going to get through 2 to 3 weeks of school. It's not going to be possible because the number of kids who will have COVID in an unmasked situation will be high enough, either from home transmission or community transmission, or hopefully not in school transmission, but it could happen in an unmasked situation, that contact tracing won't be able to be kept up. And when that happens, the only thing left is to either close a grade or close the school, depending on how widespread it is. Again, just like with the preschools, if for some reason the school system still decides to stay mask optional, talk to your own kids about the importance of wearing a mask, including for after-school activities in and around, you know, the after-school pizza party, the club meeting. Anytime you're around anything in a situation outside of your own family and you're with other people, your children should be masked. And by all means, if they're eligible for vaccination, get them vaccinated. And that way, if they get COVID, it's a COVID cold. And actually, kids who are vaccinated have seem to actually have less of a risk of picking up Delta variant compared to adults. So get your kids vaccinated. Anybody over the age of 12 can do it. Hopefully sometime between Halloween and Thanksgiving, our under 12-year-olds will be able to get vaccinated. I know there's a lot of us looking forward to that. Jennifer asks, are cloth masks sufficient for kids going back to school, or do they need surgical masks? You know, I think the best thing to do is get a mask that the child's comfortable with and is comfortable to them and that they would like to wear. A cloth mask, if you have two plies and the weave is tight, is almost as good as a surgical mask. But a surgical mask would be okay too if your child's okay with wearing that. Some of the older kids in particular like kind of the doctor look, so, or the nurse look. And they certainly can wear a surgical mask. But if your child's more comfortable wearing a two-ply, tight-knit cloth mask, that would be sufficient. Susan asks, how about driver's ed? My child would be in the car with the instructor and two other kids. Susan, this is the first time I heard that one, but it's actually a good question because in-car transmission is a high because obviously kids are close together and circulation's not good. Well, you can talk to the instructor about, instead of having the air conditioner blowing, having the windows open, that helps. Everyone should be masked in the car. Personally, if I had a child who was going through driver's ed right now and there were unmasked kids in the car, I'd be asked to let out and I'd find a different way. Because it's a high-risk situation. But I think responsibles, driver's ed teachers, will wear a mask, and kids in the car should be asked to, too. So I would put the responsibility on the driver's ed teacher to make that happen. Mertis asks, would a moderately crowded indoor water park be considered a risky activity for children between 5 and 11? I know where you're thinking of, and I have been to that moderately crowded water park, and in the wintertime, it's more than moderately crowded. You know, it's sort of in the middle, because these water parks are in really big, big rooms that are pretty well ventilated. But the more crowded, the higher the risk goes. So a few things I might think about if taking my family to an indoor water park. One is doing it while it's still warm enough to do it outdoors and go to an outdoor water park. That would probably be the best. If you really have to do it in the wintertime when it's cold, and you're go off hours. Rather than go on a Saturday afternoon, take a Friday off from work and go on Friday afternoon, or take a Thursday off of work and go a Thursday afternoon. The less people, the less risk. And when you're not actually doing the water activity, when you're getting out to go find your pizza and sit down and stuff, put your masks on as you're walking about. Most of the time, the indoor water parks I'm thinking of have hotels associated with them. And so you'll have the other risks that you might have with that kind of congregate residence. So personally, I'd probably try to find a way to do it outdoors before it gets cold. My fully vaccinated daughter is breastfeeding her baby and would like to know how much immunity she's passing along. Turns out a fair amount, actually, because one of the main antibodies we make when we get vaccinated is something we call an IgG antibody. That IgG antibody gets transferred in breast milk, as does some of the IgA antibodies. And so, yes, there is some immunity that's passed on with breastfeeding. And that's not just for COVID, but for anything. Get your tetanus shot, pass that on to the child too. Get your whooping cough shot, pass some of that on to your child. So breastfeeding's a great way to help get your immune system and your child up to speed quicker. Kevin asks, I had COVID last year and I'm not vaccinated. Do I still have some natural immunity the same as being vaccinated? That's a good question, and the answer is yes and no. It seems like immunity is still, from natural infection, is still long-lasting. So we know that now from a year and a half's worth of experience of COVID. It does wane some with time, as most natural immunities do. But largely, you still have some protection. You may not have as much protection, though, against Delta variant or some of the other variants that are out there. And so if you've had COVID and you then get vaccinated after having COVID, not only do you boost your antibody levels considerably, somewhere between 10 to 100 times, actually, but you also increase the potpourri of different antibodies that you have against COVID. So instead of all of them being directed at a certain type of virus, COVID virus, you get more antibodies directed against some of the other ones that have had a couple mutations in them. So getting vaccinated after having COVID is a good idea. You'll be have a lot more robust response if exposed. So I would recommend it. Martha asked, my husband and I are both fully vaccinated seniors with underlying health conditions. Should we be concerned about going to the local gym to work out? Maybe, yes. Sometimes I get accused of being anti-fitness center. I actually like fitness centers, but it is a higher risk area. The more breathing and the more air that comes out of a respiratory tract from somebody who is either symptomatically or asymptomatically infected, the higher risk of transmission. So one of the things that makes Delta more infectious is that it makes more viral particles in a person. So in the old days with Alpha or before, let's say you have X levels of viral particles you'd exhale. With Delta, you probably have 100 times X that come out of your body. And so that's going to get out in the air. And the exercise machines in the fitness center then can keep it up in the air. And so your risk might be higher. If I was, even if I was fully vaccinated, and if I had underlying medical problems, I would probably be avoiding fitness centers right now. But I will say that they're not all the same, and the activities are different. So if you're going to a low impact aerobics class, and all the other seniors in there are likely vaccinated, and you're wearing a mask, it's probably okay. But it's where the high impact aerobics, it's where the high velocity exercising machines, where people are exchanging a lot of air, I would avoid those areas indoors. But I certainly would go take a walk on a greenway. I certainly would go to the Vita courses that are next to the Greenway. Those things are all fine. Keith asks, we are fully vaccinated, mask-wearing senior gamblers. Is it safe to try our luck in the Cherokee casinos? I guess it depends how lucky you are. A casino is probably a higher risk area. Actually, I would be a little bit questioning how many people in the casino would also be vaccinated. And while I don't go into casinos a lot, so can't say from personal experience, I'm not sure it's a mask-wearing crowd. So you're going to have to kind of make that assessment yourself. How crowded is it? How many people are in there? Is everyone masked or not? Does the casino require masks? Do people follow that requirement? Those are all things that are going to change the risk. Again, it's like the water park. If you know a time when there's not as many people in there, so if there's a row of 100 slot machines and there's only 3 people at the slots, it's a lot less risky as if there's 100 people at the slot machines. So. It kind of gets to it right now, the fact that the way I kind of see it right now with this Delta wave is that I don't like saying don't do something. I say modify the way you do it. So if you're going to have a neighborhood block party and that could be a higher risk thing. But if you do it outside and you do it in an area that's big enough where people can spread out, it's likely a safe thing to do. But if it rains, don't bring it inside. I think we should try to get through this Delta wave doing as many things as we can without having to completely eliminate things. So I'm sort of more of a adjust and modify. And so like with the casinos, adjust, go to an off time. Make sure you have a mask. Go to a casino that has where masks are required. It's going to be a better situation. Pam asks, should we be wearing N95 masks instead of cloth masks? Largely I don't think we need to. N95s are hard to wear for a long period. I know because I'm a healthcare provider and sometimes I have to. They're hard to wear for a long time. An N95 that comes off the face frequently is probably not helping you all that much. There are some situations though where an N95 might provide you some additional peace of mind. One would be is if you're immunocompromised or have some serious underlying health conditions and you have to go out to a public place that might be crowded and you can't avoid it, then that might be a place to wear your N95. If you are going to church and there's a church choir up there and there's a lot of people singing and you don't know about their vaccination status, I might wear an N95 because singing puts out a lot of particles. An N95 is really hard to wear to a fitness center because if you want to do any kind of exercise, it's hard to move enough air through them. So I'd probably just avoid that situation. Savan asked, do I need to wear a mask indoors or outdoors if fully vaccinated? Right now, I would say indoors, and I can tell you that some of our local governments are right now considering mask mandates for indoors for both private and public places. Here in Forsyth County right now, all of our government buildings, masks are required, both for Winston-Salem as well as Forsyth County. But you might see more local mandates for masks. That's the same in North Carolina as it is all over the country. More, it seems the states have sort of passed off that responsibility off to local governments to make those decisions. There are notably a few exception states where they won't pass off that responsibility and have made it hard for local governments. But fortunately, North Carolina is not one of those. Outdoors, I don't think you need to wear a mask. I've been saying that all along. I still feel that way, unless you're in a really crowded situation, like a big festival party downtown where there's a lot of people standing in line at the food truck waiting for that delicious taco or all those other great food truck foods, and you're standing in line. There's a lot of people in line with you milling about waiting for their food. Put on a mask. Keep your mask in your back pocket. And in that way, if you need to pull it out sometime where things just seem a little bit too crowded, put your mask on. But largely otherwise outdoors, I don't think you need it. Rhonda asked, should I go to our family reunion if some family members have not been vaccinated? Boy, that's a tough one. The questions that I get involving families themselves are always the hardest ones. And there's a lot of corollary questions. You know, my sister in Tennessee refuses to get vaccinated, but wants me to come visit. What should I do? I would say a family reunion, if outside, which could be done in a picnic area, and if there's kids there who are under 12, and you're getting under the pavilion and everyone's getting together, maybe there's a little bit of rain or you're in the food line, you got your mask in your back pocket, pull out the mask in those situations. And by all means, have the kids do it too. But if you're spread out and you're playing volleyball outside at your family reunion, then I don't think you need to have the mask on. If you have a high risk medical condition and you're immunocompromised, you might consider avoiding it and tune in virtually if you can. I'm doing it that way. Transmission can occur in those settings. If you're vaccinated and you're healthy, then if you get COVID, it's mostly an annoyance. So you're going to have to make the decision itself whether getting COVID, if vaccinated, is that annoyance is worth it. If you have young kids at home, maybe it's not. Because in households, if you as a parent get a COVID cold, a breakthrough infection, and you have kids under the age of 12 who've not been vaccinated at home, then for those 10 days, you probably should all be wearing a mask in the house. No one really wants to do that, so it might be easiest just to avoid the potential exposure in the first place. So anyway, that's the questions I have, so glad and ask the people in the room if they have any questions to bring up.
We had a viewer email. I guess this particular viewer had received the Johnson & Johnson and wanted to know if they should go and start the two-step process of getting either the Moderna or Pfizer. So in essence, getting revaccinated.
Yeah, so if you got the J&J vaccine, would I get revaccinated? You know, right now I probably wouldn't. It seems like actually J&J is hanging in there just as well as the messenger RNA vaccine for serious infection, hospitalizations, and deaths. And then actually, while that study wasn't quite designed to show this, if you look at the Cape Cod outbreak, you know, Provincetown, which is why we're all wearing masks again, because a lot of information came out of there about vaccinated people and breakthroughs. It turns out that those people vaccinated with J&J's were no more likely to have a breakthrough than the messenger RNA people. So it seems to be hanging in there. At some point, we may be sane to do that. I don't think we'll ask, if we do say to add a second shot if you've gotten J&J, I don't think we're going to say to get a full revaccination series. Actually, what I think will be said would be get another J&J or get one dose of a messenger RNA vaccine. There is a little bit of a hitch about mixing up the vaccine. And if that you want to do some particularly international travel, some countries won't recognize it if you've gotten a mixed vaccine series. But that could change in the future. But I would say right now, I don't think you need to run out and get a second shot of any of the vaccines.
Doctor, you touched on breakthroughs, and the number one question I'm hearing from people is, you know, why should I bother getting vaccinated when we're having vaccinated people get COVID? So I guess, can you touch on that?
Yeah, sure.
I
have a really quick answer for why should I get vaccinated if some vaccinated people are getting COVID. First of all, if you listen to the media, you would think that everyone is getting a breakthrough infection. And that's just simply not true. If you look at population-based studies, it's probably 1 in 10. So it's not quite as common as what the conception is. I mean, the CDC was saying it's rare. I wouldn't call it rare, but it's not common. So two is that I would much rather have a COVID cold than COVID pneumonia. I would much rather have my infection, if I get a breakthrough, go away in 1 to 3 days, which is the average duration of symptoms from a breakthrough right now, rather than 7 to 10 days, which is the average duration of symptoms if you're unvaccinated and have a mild case. And I would much rather be vaccinated and then get a breakthrough infection than die. And I mean, that's sort of the ultimate bottom line. The vaccine protects you from hospitalization and death. Being unvaccinated, right now 99% of the people in our hospital are unvaccinated who have COVID.
Lastly, we are about a week away from high school football season and a month away from college football season. So yeah. What are your thoughts on full capacity right now?
Well, that's a good question. Luckily, football's outside, and that helps a lot. If I was a high school principal or a high school coach, I would go ahead and say, let's have a full capacity bleacher, collect that revenue, which is important, and have everyone wear a mask. Because, you know, they're all shoulder to shoulder and yelling and rah, 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 more air movement. And I would give it a shot. I'd do it that way. Mask up and have a nice football game. That's, again, the concept. The mask is there to help us do some of the things we would still like to do. Last year, we would just have canceled it, right? We wouldn't even have done it. This year, let's do it, but let's do it with a mask on. College is where those discussions are going on right now at just about every university, and so I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But I think what a lot of places probably will do is you can be unmasked outside in the large stadium, but if you have to go into the concourse to go to the bathroom or go stand in the food line, you got to put a mask on. If you're in the boxes upstairs, a lot of those are okay. They have an indoor-outdoor situation, so you can be outdoors without a mask on. If you want to be indoors because it's chilly or cold, put your mask on in there. And then I think we can have a football game, complete with marching bands, by the way. So.
We're going off of the driver's ed car, question that we had. There was a question about school buses, and there was someone saying that federal regulations and that everyone still wears a mask in there, but what are your thoughts on school buses? Is it safe for parents to put their kids on them?
Yeah, we've had some experience with school buses actually throughout the summer, because a lot of camps are busing kids. And the university shuttle buses is another area. And so, yes, you need to wear a mask. It's a federal law that you have to be masked in public transportation. That law has not gone away. I think that mask kids on a school bus is okay, and that if the windows are open, it makes it even safer. And if everyone's masked on the school bus and it's a K-12 situation, if there is somebody who is identified on the bus later who has COVID, the transmission risk is low enough that right now in North Carolina we don't have to quarantine those other kids. So I think school buses are okay right now. We'll keep an eye on it, but I think they're okay. Good question.
I have a question going back to the vaccine. So if the third shot is approved for immunocompromised, should people stick with, if they've already gotten two shots of Pfizer, should they stick with Pfizer or vice versa with Moderna?
Yeah, so the question is for the immunocompromised, if you got two shots of Pfizer, should I stick with Pfizer for my third shot, or should I go with Moderna for my third shot? The ACIP is going to tell us that on Friday, which is tomorrow. My guess is that you'll stick with the same. That seems to be more the way we think here in the U.S. In Europe, they might switch it up a little bit, but I'd probably stick with the same one myself. Any other questions? Great. Have a nice weekend. And next week, we're going to have a special treat. Casey Ramirez, one of the infectious diseases pediatricians, is going to come up here with me, and we are going to have a nice interview and discussion. And we're going to focus on COVID with kids because school's coming up. And if you have questions that you want Casey and I to address next week that we haven't done so already, but still need some clarifications, go ahead and submit that, and we'll be here next week.